From Creative Force, I'm Daniel Jester, and this is the e-commerce content creation podcast. It's not an uncommon idea that the tenure of a creative team member in an e-commerce studio tends to be short, typically 2 to 3 years. It's easy to understand how this idea persists because creative production for e-commerce can be quite repetitive, especially if you're a full-time employee shooting or styling day in, day out. Changing teams, studios, or brands can help keep things interesting for a career product photographer or other creative role. What if we in the studio challenged this idea? What if we create policies and culture that encourages retention and in fact rewards it? It's easier said than done, but Josie, Diamond, and I have a lot to say about it.
You're also then opening up the floor for people to have progression. You know, if more senior roles become available, 9 times out of 10, I would have thought, if someone's got the skills, you've helped them kind of build up towards the next step, they'd be a really prime candidate for that. So the longer you can keep people, the more avenues you open up for them, both in-house, but also for your own team longevity, I suppose. If you're trying to build a senior team, that it's almost perfect in some ways.
On the day that we recorded this episode, it occurred to me that after the pandemic, I've been out of the studio for going on almost 3 years. So I got to thinking, is this still true? And certainly I feel that we still have this perception. I've talked to people about this 2 to 3 year perception, but I started thinking, is this still true? So today I posted a poll on my LinkedIn, and the responses have been pretty surprising to me. One of the answers was 4 or more years as the longest time spent in a single studio in creative production. Now, most of the respondents, as you look through them, are pretty senior level roles, in some cases managing directors, directors, even VPs. And so that makes a little bit of sense to me, but I'm really curious to see how it's going to shake out as time passes, as more answers come in, what the reality of the average tenure in a studio is. So that's enough of me up top, too much probably. Let's get to Josie. This is the e-commerce content creation podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Jester. Joining me for this episode, Josie Diamond of John Lewis. Hi, Josie. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. We just got done having a long talk about our shared experience in very hot weather. Mm-hmm. You in the UK, a little bit different from my experience. Still very hot weather on both sides, but the implications are a little different in the UK than in Southern California.
Very slightly. Well, maybe a bit more than slightly, but we like to freak out about the weather, whether it's good or bad. So yeah.
It's a good thing that our topic on the episode today is HVAC and cooling systems for studios, which I know that you're an expert in now. No, I'm just kidding.
Took a degree in that. Yeah, I could speak about it for hours.
No, you took a degree to try to knock things down a few degrees. Hey, all right.
Well done. Yeah. Good stuff.
It's early over here, so this is the best you're going to get out of me.
I liked it. It was good.
Josie, we had a really great conversation a few weeks ago talking about, we met for the first time in New York. I believe that was the first time that we met. Mm-hmm. Great conversations. You're a friend of the Kevin Mason, who I'm going to happily name drop on this podcast as one of the industry celebrities that I think everybody should know who they are. I was thinking about titling this episode, but I was worried, Josie, that it would be too strong of wording for you. Mm-hmm. In our little outline document that I shared with you before the episode, there's a place for a working title. And sometimes that ends up being the title of the episode, sometimes it doesn't. But at one point, the thought had crossed my mind to title the episode Challenging the Status Quo of Retention. And I was like, maybe that's too strong of language for Josie.
I like it. I like it.
I mean, let's set the tone a little bit. I've been talking about on LinkedIn, I've had a couple of posts that were fairly popular with some people kind of commenting their thoughts on the ideas of retention in the studio. And there's been a persistent idea in the industry, and I definitely am somebody who has both embraced this, second thought this, participated actively in it by never staying at one studio longer than 2 or 3 years. But, you know, this idea that a life cycle of a creative employee in a, you know, e-com studio, seemingly e-com studios in particular, but I think that this persists across a lot of different, like, various types of studios that exist out there. It just don't last longer than 2 or 3 years. And I got to thinking a while ago, is this something that we can't control, or are we perpetuating it by just accepting it and then not trying to do anything to retain employees in any meaningful way? And when you look at it through that lens, and I think you agree with me on this, Josie, when you look at it through the lens of, are we not doing anything? Are we accepting this and then not doing anything? You realize that there might be some things that you could do to affect this in a way that you retain employees a little bit longer. It's an interesting concept to talk about because there's a benefit to the studio and the team and the processes to have employees stay in one place longer. But it really is incumbent on the studio to make the employee want to stay, because what benefit is there to the creative other than some stability? If you're not giving them career progression, if you're not giving them professional development, it's incumbent on the studio to make people want to stay. So let's open it up. Let's open up the conversation with that bold statement.
I mean, I totally agree. And I think it's one of those things that you could actually argue both ways. Retention, to me, is obviously more of a benefit. I think, you know, in an ideal situation, you probably want about 50-50, because I think we've all probably worked with teams where you have people who get stuck in their ways and that can be a hindrance. But I think for the most part, retention is a really key thing, probably a metric that needs to be recorded a bit more. But yeah, I mean, for me, being able to keep people in a company for as long as possible, help them, support them, even try and get them ready for their next career, even if it's not in your own company, only actually has a benefit for the company that you're working with. And that all, to me, you know, primarily starts with your budgets, but also how can you think a bit more outside the box that people sort of thrive in your environment, I suppose. I don't know if that kind of resonates with what I'm saying, but yeah, I think it. People like variety, people like to be expanding.
It does make sense and it does resonate. And you kind of, you threw a little bit of a gauntlet down there in one way, which is, you're going to turn it into a metric. You're going to turn retention into a studio KPI, and all of a sudden everybody's face gets pretty serious, right? Like these are the things that arguably studio leadership care the most about. But the idea of, it wouldn't be that hard to stretch a overall company goal and make the determination that at the studio level that retention is critical to meeting the needs of that overall goal. Like if your organization as a whole has some, you know, we talk about all the time, sort of like, not fluid, what's the term I'm looking for? Semi-ambiguous, buzzwordy type goals, like become a leader of content in our space. One way to interpret that at the studio level is that, how do we become a leader of content in our space? Maybe one of the metrics and maybe one of the KPIs you want to start measuring in your studio is average retention of your studio team.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe if you can bump it from 3 years to four, you get people who are there long enough building skills to help you drive towards becoming a content leader in your space.
You're also then opening up the floor for people to have progression. You know, if more senior roles become available, 9 times out of 10, I would have thought, if someone's got the skills, you've helped them kind of build up towards the next step, they'd be a really prime candidate for that. So the longer you can keep people, the more avenues you open up for them, both in-house but also for your own team longevity, I suppose. If you're trying to build a senior team, that it's almost perfect in some ways to be able to keep people in-house for longer because they have that background knowledge. And then I guess, you know, in terms of going back to the KPI point, if you've got an in-house recruitment team, there's a cost to having to recruit all of the time. Or even if you use agency, you know, there's a cost to that. It's probably quite quantifiable.
First, let's just acknowledge that there are a couple of different ways to think about career development. To me, meaningful career growth in a space that could lead to increased retention in the studio is title and money, right? Like, I know that there's a little bit of a difference between different regions, different sort of work cultures. But here in the United States, like, people put a lot of value on title and it can be important to them. And in some cases, even just something as simple as moving from a photographer to a senior photographer can mean a lot to somebody.
For sure. Yeah.
And then the other side of career development is like the skills that you pick up along the way. And in some ways they should be related. I think if you're going to go from a photographer to a senior photographer, stylist to like a senior stylist, to me that implies you've achieved some level of skill above and beyond somebody who was onboarded a month ago. And so sometimes that comes with skills, but another type of career development is opportunity. Opportunity to work on projects a little bit outside of what you do in your day-to-day and that kind of thing. Those two things, I think, are... they're both sort of professional development, but those are the things that can be really powerful to impact retention in a studio, but also really difficult because a lot of studios are pretty small. Even for some huge companies, the studios are pretty small. There isn't a lot of headcount, which means that to some extent, sometimes title becomes superfluous to your day-to-day because you still might be the only photographer in the studio.
Yeah. It's very similar in the UK. The progression in your title, as you said as well, the avenues open up, right, for your next move. But yeah, I mean, the headcount thing's an interesting thing. It's something that I've experienced before just in teams that I've managed that, yeah, you've only got a certain amount of roles that you can have. So, you know, if you land in one of them where there's no progression until someone else leaves, then you need to look at what your day-to-day looks like, right, to be able to then make it interesting. But also, you know, your manager should really be doing this as well to make sure, again, back to retention, that there's variety, there's opportunity, and this person, whoever it is, or your whole team feels like they're getting something back from the work that they're doing. I kind of think it probably goes down to like your most basic human needs in terms of happiness, right? Is that you want to have opportunity, you want to have variety, you want to be trusted, you want to know that you kind of have a bit of bandwidth to experiment as well. And I think if you kind of take those needs and think about the studio, or you think about the role itself that you're, you know, maybe have in mind, if you can create the space for all of those to thrive, then I think you may have nailed retention as a KPI.
Let's take a step back really quick. We got deep into like some meaty parts of this talk with promotions and titles. I want to roll back to kind of, you know, what are some of the reasons that a studio should consider making an effort to retain? Like, let's say that some studio manager listener of this podcast is going to listen to this episode on their, you know, falling asleep tonight, and they're going to wake up tomorrow a changed person and decide, I'm going to go into my studio and I'm going to like find out. I'm going to find out from my team, like, what if we challenge this idea of retention? There are definitely pros to this. There are definitely, if you're making a pros and cons list, there are a lot of good reasons why you should make some effort to retain people a little bit more. In your mind, Josie, and in your experience, what are some of those benefits that you see when you have a retention number that's higher than average for a studio?
I think, like, for me, just to start off anyway, the pros outweigh the cons here, because I think you get so much more from keeping people in your business for longer. I think number one, the probably a more obvious one, is that, you know, in the event that you do come round to hiring next time round, high retention is so desirable for a new candidate. And, you know, again, with today's world, this is the most competitive market there is in terms of hiring at the moment. So if you've got, you know, solid evidence that you can retain a team, it's very attractive for whatever talent you're trying to bring in. And we know how competitive this industry can get. So being able to bring in a great photographer or a great stylist, makeup artist, whoever that is going to be so key. So yeah, definitely retention being, you know, number one as a kind of attraction. But also, I was thinking about this the other day, and I think social media is now playing a part in this too. I've for sure seen it on Instagram. You know, you get these generic accounts that are like, you know, the art direction ones just for art directors around the globe, or I've even seen the buying accounts that they like to name and shame companies, but they also like to do the opposite, and they like to say, where are the great places to work? So if that is the new world that we're working in, then having your good or bad practices shared online will help or detract you from getting great talent. But it will also help you keep the talent you've got if people can see that where you're working is a great place. I don't know. Have you ever experienced anything like that?
I personally have put a lot of value in what my perception of an organization was. A great example of this is Amazon. At the time that I accepted the job with Amazon was around the time that I think the New York Times put out a report about working conditions at Amazon, and it was not a great report. And, you know, for one thing, Amazon is a huge company, and within Amazon, many different parts of the company are sort of operated like independent businesses, and product imaging is one of them. Product imaging was its own independent business. And I remember being questioned about this by people because they had read that story and then found out that I was, you know, moving across country to work for Amazon. And they said, "Are you worried about this?" And I said, "I'm not, because I've been in the studio. I've met the team. I know who they are. I am very confident that this is a group of people that I will work well with and under and for." But, you know, the impression of what it's like to work for a company is a big one for me. And that's one of the questions, if I have an opportunity to ask other employees, and I remember very specifically, I'm going to name drop Joe Polifrone on this podcast. He was the guy that I shadowed for a moment on one of my interview days at Amazon. And I just asked him point blank, like, "Do you like it here? Do you like working here?" And surprisingly, like, I don't think I've ever had anybody ask me this question who was in the process of interviewing. And I've always wondered, like, am I going to get an honest answer? Are they going to hedge, or am I going to get like this person's very honest opinion? And I think in Joe's case, I think he did give me a very honest rundown of how he felt. Because everybody feels differently in different days. You can have a bad day at a job you really like and not feel like you want to work there anymore.
Yeah.
Those impressions, I think, are really important to me. But then, you know, the other thing, and just being like honest about it and how I thought about taking on roles, at least at a certain point in my career, it was also partially about sort of collecting trophies, if that makes sense. Like having Amazon on your resume, I felt like was something to be proud of. Same with Farfetch, even though my tenure there was pretty short-lived. This is a company that people know and want to work for. There's a little bit of trophy collecting element to it. So I think in that way, you get like sort of warped decision-making. Like maybe I feel a little weird about this studio, but I'm going to join the team anyway because I want that name recognition on my CV at the end of the 2 years when I've served my time.
Sure. I mean, I can understand that totally. And I think, yeah, if perception becomes reality, great. But if it, you know, if your perception of a place is kind of skewed before you go there through whatever is happening in that environment, then I think that's a real key kind of area that managers should be looking at. Because nowadays, more and more goes online, in my opinion, is a good thing. But it just opens it up for people to be able to see you as a prospective employer. And I think you can get a real sense for an organisation by the people who are working there. And yeah, I mean, I agree, probably a weird question to ask in an interview, but I have heard it before, you know, where people would either ask me, you know, "How long has your longest employee been there?"
Oh, yeah. So in that way, I have asked it like that. Yeah, when you put it that, I didn't think about that. But I have asked that question in that exact phrasing, like, "Who's your most tenured employee here?"
Yeah. And I mean, if someone comes back to you and they're like 10, 15 years, you kind of have to think, okay, this should be a good environment, right? Yeah.
The next question is, I want to meet this person and make sure they're not crazy.
Exactly. Wait, what area of the business do they work in as well? Yeah, right.
It's the equipment manager who never leaves the equipment closet, and he doesn't, you know, nobody knows exactly what he does in there.
For sure. But yeah, I find that to be an interesting kind of figure, even from a personal perspective. If I'm going to speak to a prospective employer, I would quite like to know that. But yeah, and then I guess like kind of going back to your question, like, why should we make an effort to retain people? Again, you know, we said it before, but it's the knowledge, isn't it? You keep it within the team, within the business. A lot of projects, everyone underestimates, I believe. But I think if you start a 6-month project, realistically, you're going to still be trying to figure things out and tinker things maybe 18 months into it. If you want to kind of keep knowledge, you want to keep developing, you want to keep progressing whatever it is you're trying to work on, whether it's a process, a project, anything, then having that person retained and in your team is going to allow you to progress further, in my opinion. But yeah, and you know, inform on business strategy as well. So yeah,
that's a great segue to what I think is one of the pretty effective policies. It's hard for me to say how much of an effective policy, how much it impacts retention. But one of the bullet points for us to talk about, Josie, was like programs or policies that helped increase retention for studio employees and creatives. At Amazon, we called it COST, Creative Offset Time. And the idea of cost, I think, was a great idea. There were some issues in the way that it was implemented because it was basically up to the studio managers at the individual Amazon studios. And some managers, I'll be really frank about this, some managers took, I think, an antagonistic attitude towards cost. You know, you had a lot of concern. I should lay out what cost is. So the way that it worked at Amazon was that you got six full days every year, every calendar year, that were paid by Amazon that you could take cost time. And depending on the studio that you worked in, you could do whatever you wanted. But it was sort of like honor system that you were going to be doing something that creatively fulfilled you in some way. And then some studios were, it was like, you could take creative offset time, but you still have to come into the studio. You have to have produced some image. If you're like basically going into a studio using an empty set to test, do some test shoots, do some of this, some of that. And part of this was it to support twice yearly portfolio review that Amazon did. And that's another thing that I really appreciated and was big in my decision-making to join Amazon as a photographer, is that they were interested in seeing a portfolio of your work, both work that you shot for Amazon. So in my case, it was tabletop product photography. But then also there's a whole section of the portfolio, what they called bar raising imagery, that was like expecting you to go out there and really push the limits of what you're able to do photographically. And cost time was intended to also support some of that bar raising imagery. So at some studios, they implemented it where if you want to take cost time, you have to like put in your application. And then afterwards, you have to show what you did, show your work. But then you had some studios where the manager would say, look, this is your time to be creatively fulfilled. If that means going to a museum and spending time in the museum to like get some, you know, you can use it how you want to use it. I was personally in favor of putting fewer restrictions on it. When I made the decision to leave Amazon, I don't remember lamenting too much that I was going to lose that benefit. But it is something that I think that every studio should consider. Because if you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, it's extraordinarily low cost to basically give somebody time back. It's very, very low cost for a studio to say, you can have 6 days a year where you're still going to get your paycheck for that day, but you should be doing something that creatively fulfills you or expands your knowledge or expands your skill set.
I agree. I've heard people who previously worked at Amazon, you know, Kevin being one of them, talk about these cost days. And I always thought, you know, it's a really great initiative. It should be so easy to plan. And you know what, also, I think, and possibly, you know, a reason why leaving the company, you didn't, or maybe not you, but anyone didn't feel that they were losing much, was that if you were starting out in your career or you're maybe on the more junior side of things, then this is such a great initiative to be able to build your portfolio in a professional setting where you're going to get it taken seriously. So I think if you can offer anything like that, whether, like you say, it's a few days a year, or even give people a budget, you know, give them like an allowance where maybe you don't need to do it inside of your own company, but you could say, actually, here's £1,000, go and, you know, we'll give you this for the year, you decide what you do with it, but make sure you shoot something with us and show us it. You know, you're giving them the opportunity to manage your budget, first of all, which, you know, if anyone hasn't done it before, it's a bit daunting when you've never done it before. They can go shoot anything they like. It could be they could try and hire a model for a day, maybe not at that price, but you never know. And then, yeah, you know, maybe they get a team together, get some samples together. You know, it could literally be anything. But giving people the opportunity, and again, the trust element, to go and utilize that time for them, but bring it back in to show us how, you know, how you've benefited your own skills, but also, okay, how does that open up opportunities for us? You know, if it's like tabletop, as you said that you did, maybe you've just done some amazing shoot that we can now go to the creative or marketing department and say, oh, this person on the team's got an amazing portfolio, they just did this shoot for us kind of as a test, we could do this again for you. You know, you open up opportunities for the rest of the business, and you're still kind of keeping that person involved in mind to develop their portfolio further. So I think anything like that when it comes to development is always going to be far more beneficial than the initial cost of outlaying for it.
For the studio that is like thinking about retention and wants to get serious about retention, what is one thing really that you could think has a really powerful impact on their ability to retain talent long term?
starting with the interview process for sure.
I was hoping you'd say that one.
I think you have to be so honest. You know, this is a career move for someone. It's a big decision. You know, it's not something that you can take lightly with people. So you cannot gear people up for a perfect, you know, all rosy, all singing and dancing workplace if it's not. Mm. You can be really honest and say, we want you to help us build that. But you know what, you'll risk losing people very quickly if you're not honest. But then I think, you know, something that I know that you've posted on LinkedIn about, but onboarding, right? So if your onboarding plan is good, and don't get me wrong, I think we've all been guilty, me actually quite recently, of not putting enough time into an onboarding plan, it makes the biggest difference for someone, because you bring someone into the organisation and then they're like, okay, well, what do I do now? So a really great onboarding plan. And the mistake I made was not just for your full-time people, but freelancers as well. Super, super, super important. And if you work in a hybrid team, even more important that you treat them, you know, in the same way. Mm. Allowing that time for people to learn, build relationships, to see the organization without the pressure of having to perform, is going to make the biggest difference for them feeling like they're properly set up in that job to be able to perform later down the line.
Josie, thank you so much for your time and your expertise. This episode with you has been a long time coming. I'm glad to finally get you sat down and have the conversation. I think you're great, and I look forward to another future episode with another topic that we can touch on.
Yeah, sounds great. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
That's it for this episode. Many thanks to our guest, Josie Diamond, and thanks to you for listening. The show is produced by Creative Force, edited by Calvin Lands. Special thanks to Sean O'Meara. I'm your host, Daniel Jester. Until next time, my friends. Oh, and by the way, hi, Ian.